Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. No Matt Moore today, but I've got a special guest on the line, Jeff Goodman, CBSSports.com, college basketball guru. Jeff, we're going to have new guys in the NBA draft this year like we do every year, and we're going to have new guys to say are overrated, underrated. How's it going?
Well, first of all, you couldn't get Matt out of bed this early? Was that the issue?
I don't trust my my apartment's internet. It's not the most high-tech setup here. So adding three connections at once is it's almost like a third world country with the way this internet's set up.
Well, listen, I'm just happy that I don't have to be on a podcast with Gary Parrish. So that's a win-win for me right off the bat.
I'm glad that we're at least one step up from that.
Listen, I'm excited. You know, NBA draft, it's kind of been a passion of mine for years. And this year, it's crazy, Zach. I mean, it really is. Trying to figure out who the number one pick is about as difficult as it's been since I can remember following the NBA draft, and most NBA guys would agree.
Well, that's the first question I have for you, is that it seemed like in the summer, it's Nerlens Noel, Shabazz Muhammad, like one of these guys, like this is the future. And then it kind of fizzled a little bit to start the year, and it's like, hey, you guys remember Cody Zeller? He's still good. So who is the number one pick right now?
You know, I had Zeller as the number one going in. And if you looked around, everybody had a different guy. You know, I had Zeller. I think somebody had Nerlens. Somebody had Shabazz Muhammad. Those were kind of the three that everybody thought of. And I finally changed, and I'm going with Nerlens as number one today. But there's other guys that have really jumped in the equation now. I mean, Ben McLemore, who I remember when I put out my first mock draft the day after – you know, last year's NBA draft when Anthony Davis went number one, I had Ben McLemore, I believe, at number five.
Yeah.
And everybody thought I was nuts, and I kind of didn't know whether I was nuts there as well. But, you know, I think McLemore's put himself in the equation because, again, he's so athletic. He could shoot the ball much better than people thought he could, Zach. And he's got an NBA-style body already.
Watching him, it's like – I keep trying to find an NBA comparison for him because that's what everybody wants. Like, it's who does this guy remind you of? I see a little Damian Lillard. I see the athleticism of maybe close to John Wall. I see, maybe it's just the Kansas jersey messing with my head, but I'm like, this guy is like kind of like Mario Chalmers with a much lower dribble. Like, there's just no real comparison I can find for him.
No, he's got a big, strong body, almost like a Mitch Richmond body.
Yeah.
Day, but he's more athletic. I mean, he's a high-level athlete, and again, far more skilled than most people thought he was at this stage. So he's in the equation. You know, to me, again, how many guys that are going to be in the equation for number one are potential franchise players or all-stars? I'm not sure any. I think there are a couple all-stars, but not franchise players, and I think Ben McLemore and Nerlens Noel, to me, have the highest upside of any of them. Nerlens, you know, is a tremendous shot blocker.
Yeah.
Can't score, not yet. But again, the one thing with Nerlens, and I've seen him play for about 5 or 6 years now, is he works. He competes on every play. He's long, and he can really change the game in the defensive end. I think today, from an NBA perspective, now there are some big guys, sure, he couldn't handle. But let's face it, in the NBA these days, how many good big guys are there? You know.
Yeah.
There aren't many.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at Noel, the way the league is evolving, you need to go get a Tyson Chandler. You need to go get one of those athletic bigs that can protect the rim, play pick and roll, finish the alley-oop, and maybe Noel, it might not end up being the sexiest pick, but he fits that criteria for what you want in an NBA big man.
Yeah, and again, the one thing you look at more than anything is look at the landscape of who was drafted number one in the past, and the last two guard, I believe, that was drafted number one was David Thompson way back in 1975.
That's a long time ago.
Right. So, again, what are the odds?
I mean,
drafting Shabazz Muhammad, to me, I would not take number one. Again, plays really hard, but he's not a high-level athlete like McLemore. He's not as good a shooter as McLemore. Now, again, the one thing you would say is he competes more than McLemore today. He competes on every play. He tries to dunk it every time he gets the ball in the post. defensively, he's mediocre right now, Shabazz Muhammad. So I don't, to be honest, I had him down at like number 7 back in December. I'll move him up to number 5 right now, but I'm not moving him ahead of Ben McLemore, Nerlens Noel, Cody Zeller, another guy we haven't mentioned that I think is in the mix. I don't think he'll go number 1, but has moved himself into that top 5 is Anthony Bennett at UNLV.
Yeah.
Kind of a tweener forward. A lot of people want to compare him to Larry Johnson. Fairly skilled, but again, probably 6'7" at the end of the day. And he plays hard for the most part. I can't wait to get a look at him a little bit more. And I saw him plenty over the AU circuit, but I'll see him at the Mountain West tournament for a couple straight days and get a chance to see him in person and how much he has progressed.
Yeah, Bennett's one of those interesting prospects where I was actually watching a little film on him this morning. And it is, it's you look at him, you think, all right, this guy can play power forward at the college level, but where is he at the next level? And you see maybe a little bit better Draymond Green, he moved a little bit off the ball like Luol Deng to me. Is he capable of playing the four at the next level if we're talking about a stretch four?
I guess. I mean, again, at 6'7", it'll be tough for him to get his buckets in the paint against longer guys.
Yeah.
But he is pretty athletic. I mean, he's got some pop. Again, he competes for the most part. Sometimes he takes plays off. But, again, I think Bennett's a guy in this year's draft. Normally, you'd be talking about Anthony Bennett as like a, late lottery pick. But you got to change everything this year. Those guys that were late lottery picks in ordinary years are right now somewhere in that top, 5 discussion. I mean, again, Ben McLemore probably in an ordinary year would go somewhere around, 8 to 10. This year he's going to go in the top. I'd be shocked if he slips out of the top 5.
Every year for the last 3 years, it seems like this is a bad draft because it's going to be a weak draft. It's going to be a weak draft. And maybe it's just a weak draft for franchise players lately. Anthony Davis aside, Kyrie Irving has obviously ended up working out quite a bit for Cleveland, but we keep hearing that it's going to be a weak draft. Is it a weak draft or is it just a weak draft for stars? Are there a couple dozen role players that you would love to have coming out of this draft?
Absolutely. Listen, the bottom line is at the top, this draft does not have franchise players or a ton of all-stars. However, it does have quality depth. There's not a lot of disparity between, frankly, 1 and maybe, 20. Okay, right now I'm looking at my overall rankings, the latest, and I've got Nerlens at 1, Ben McLemore at 2, then all the way down, James Michael McAdoo at 23, C.J. McCollum at 24, Willie Cauley-Stein, there's a great example. Nerlens at 1, Willie Cauley-Stein at 21, okay? Playing the same team, Nerlens obviously is further ahead right now.
Yeah.
Cauley-Stein was a football player, now he's hurt at this point. Just isn't ready yet. But Willie Cauley-Stein could end up being as good, if not better, than Nerlens Noel. He's big, he's strong, he's athletic, he competes like Nerlens. He's just got more of an NBA body in terms of, again, being able to handle the rigors, the strength of the NBA today. But again, he's probably 2 years behind Nerlens in terms of, his development, because I think a big part was because he was a football player in high school.
So we're not looking at like a DeMarcus Cousins, Daniel Orton situation?
No. Willie Cauley-Stein is, again, a kid that you talk to people around him and they rave about how hard he plays, his character. This is a really high character group, to be honest, in Kentucky. There's no DeMarcus Cousins in the mix. There's no Daniel Orton. These are good kids, and that's part of the problem as to why they're struggling so far, Zach, is because they don't have that killer on this team. They don't even have a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist to kind of take some of the pressure off. Nerlens is the closest thing to it, but he's not a leader. And Alex Poitras, I wish the light would go on consistently for him. But, again, another kid I've seen play for years, and he's just not really he doesn't want to be the guy. I've always said that. He's much more comfortable in that kind of number 2 or 3 role where he can kind of show up some games and really dominate in other games. He just kind of goes through the motions.
Alex Poitras is intriguing to me because the more I watch him, the more I think, I've seen this story before. It's a short power forward, athletic, can shoot the ball from outside. He looks a lot like maybe Derek Williams to me, only he doesn't have the hype of this guy's going number two in the draft. I think if Derek Williams had been a later lottery pick, nobody would care how he struggled so far. They would all be looking for encouraging signs, but instead they just want to kill him. Is Poitras going to get the benefit of being in a deeper draft?
You know, I dropped Poitras. I had him top five back in December, and now I've got him, I believe, at number 13 overall.
Yeah.
And, again, somebody will still take him in the lottery because of that potential, because of the body, because of the skill set. But you're right. I mean, he does have a lot of similarities to Derek Williams. The one difference was Derek Williams carried his team.
Right.
And he really did. And he started making threes, and he's not a great shooter. But once he got in a role, his confidence just started soaring. And this kid was able to carry his team in a weak Pac-12, by the way.
Yeah.
Where Alex Poitras really hasn't proven anything. You know, what's he done? He's had his moments. But again, there's more questions than answers right now with Alex Poitras. And that's why his stock, to me, has dropped as much as almost anybody's from before the start of the season.
And with him, I mean, his team is so deep. He's probably not going to have to answer those questions at any point in the season, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, development is key for Poitras. Can he get better? Can he peak at the right time at the end of the season? I think that's what it's going to be all about for Poitras. People will forget about what he did early. If the light can go on at the end, I'm just not sure it's going to go on.
Two point guards, really, well, I guess Goodwin's more of a shooting guard. Archie Goodwin really intrigues me. He's a maybe a combo guard at the next level, but he moves exactly like John Wall. Like the dribble, the jumper, it all seems similar to me, and he's got that really quick athletic jump. Where do you see him at the next level?
You know, Goodwin's a guy that he's got to improve his decision-making. He's had a rough year because at the beginning of the season, if you remember, Kentucky didn't have Ryan Harrow for much of the early part of the season. So Calipari had to throw, and literally he threw Archie Goodwin to the point, and he was not ready at all. So I think Archie Goodwin's mentality, his mindset, has been kind of messed around with this year, and he kind of didn't know what he was, trying to be a point when he's really not. He's a straight two at the next level to me. But what he's got to work on is, you know, when to attack, how to take good quality shots, not taking contested shots, not dribbling too deep and making mistakes. His IQ's got to improve for the game because I think, again, he's a very talented kid. He likes to attack. I love that aggressiveness about him. But sometimes he's got to reel it in and understand when the right time to attack is and when the right time is to just kind of run offense.
How realistic is it to expect a guy's basketball IQ to improve? Is that something you kind of just have, or do you really think that can be worked on?
Well, I think, again, either you have it or you don't for the most part, but if you're playing the same system over and over and over, you learn.
Yeah.
You just learn by repetition. It's like anything else. But if you're constantly changing your system, if you're playing for different coaches every year in the NBA, I think it's tough, and that's when you get exposed for not having a high basketball IQ. But, you know, again, I think if you're playing with the same coach in the same system, you know, even in college, you know, for 4 years, let's face it. I mean, you start to learn. They dummy it down for you if you're a star.
Yeah.
You don't have to run too much. Where in the NBA, none of these guys are going to have the offense run or designed for them. These guys aren't good enough to have that. So I think, you know, we talk about a guy like Ben McLemore has to work on his IQ. Archie Goodwin certainly has to work on his basketball IQ. But again, like you said, I'm not sure you can do a ton with that. I think you're born with that for the most part.
The other guy that, I mean, I think the nation's fallen in love with is Michigan's Trey Burke. Like, I watch this guy and I was banging the drum on Kyle Lowry for the NBA for a while now, and he's worked out a little bit lately, which made me look a lot smarter than I actually am. But Trey Burke kind of plays a similar way. Like, he's just really tenacious, has great control of the ball, solid shot. Is he a guy that can maybe creep towards the top five just because it's become such a point guard league?
Yeah, well, and I think we saw last year Damian Lillard, who's different. I mean, they're different. Obviously, Lillard was a big-time scorer and played in a league, you know, at Weber State and the Big Sky that people had a lot of questions. But there weren't a lot of really good point guards, and there aren't these days. That's going to be – we're going to be saying that every year now because, frankly, there just aren't a lot of really good point guards. at the younger level anymore. Everybody wants to be a scorer. But Trey Burke, I think, and I jumped him up from, I had him probably in the 20 range in December, jumped him all the way up in the lottery now because, you know, for one thing, he can really run pick and roll, okay? And that's, you know how huge that is in the NBA.
Yes.
He can also shoot the ball. He's gotten stronger. He's not a great athlete, but his athleticism's even improved. So I think Burke's got a high IQ, can shoot it, can run pick and roll, isn't a bad defender. So I think he's not your typical point guard for what people are looking for right now, the Rondos, the Westbrooks, you know, the great athletic point guards. But you know what? He's a guy that can clearly run a team at the next level. And again, it's tough to, you got to kind of pick your poison with him because he can shoot it. He can also pass it. He's still figuring out how to do both and balance both, as we saw this past weekend in Bloomington against Indiana. He probably looked for his own a little bit too much. But he admitted that to me about a week and a half ago, that he's still figuring that out, especially with this team that has a lot of offensive weapons.
Is that something that you don't mind seeing out of a college point guard, as a guy doing a little trial and error with his game? Even if it costs his team a game or two, just trying different things. I mean, that it shows a willingness to work on the game, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think him admitting that he's still figuring it out, where a lot of guys wouldn't have that self-confidence to be able to say that.
Yeah.
And I think Burke is also, and I talked to Zach Novak about this, his former teammate at Michigan, a great leader. And those things are hard to find as well. Remember, he's leading a very young team. Four of their top seven at Michigan are freshmen right now. And Burke's only got a year of experience. He's got Tim Hardaway, the veteran on the team, and Jordan Morgan, who's just a solid veteran inside guy, a redshirt junior. But it's Burke's team as a sophomore leading a bunch of young kids. And right now they're in the top five. So you got to give him some credit for that too, for the intangibles.
You know, we see a bunch of very hyped high school players sometimes fall off immediately in college basketball. You could make the argument that maybe Austin Rivers did, just compared to the hype coming in. Mick Kambango at Texas, what happened to him? I mean, he was near the top of everyone's charts a year ago.
Yeah, Mike Kambango,
sorry.
Kid who, you know, he's been suspended for the first 23 games of this year by the NCAA. For basically not being forthcoming in an NCAA. Well, he actually lied to the University of Texas in their part of the investigation. He'll be back in a couple weeks, but the big thing for him, coming out of high school, he used his speed and could just kind of flat out dominate with his speed. And he's a kid who's got an infectious way about him, very outgoing, knows how to lead. We all thought he'd be a dominant, you know, player from day one last year, but he struggled. A lot of it was because, again, not a great shooter and was playing on a young team in which the leader was Jacobin Brown. And when the leader was Jacobin Brown, you're in major, major trouble.
Right. Jacobin had a workout here in Minneapolis, and he had a fun personality, but
yeah,
never blew me away with the talent.
I don't know if Rick Barnes would call him fun. yeah, Kambango will be back. He'll get like the last, you know, eight games of the regular season. From what I hear, listen, the best thing about Mike Kambango, through all this that's happened to him getting the 23-game suspension, is that Mike Kambango has decided to stay silent, not talk. And that tells me he's changed a little bit. That tells me he's more about basketball and getting better than necessarily talking, which he does so well, not in a bad way. He likes the media, he likes to talk a lot, and I think by him staying silent, I think it shows that he's mature.
Another guy who maybe has fallen in a similar free fall since high school hype, LeBrian Nash at Oklahoma State. What happened there?
Yeah, you know, talented kid, but again, another kid that you kind of question whether he was going to be, you know, a producer at this level, and whether his game would translate. He was always bigger, stronger, more athletic than the other guys he played against in high school and in the summer at AAU. And I think now he's not able to use that. Now you got to rely on your basketball intellect and your skill level, and other guys have really caught up to him. Again, a talented kid, but not a guy that I would have in the lottery at this point. I think he's really fallen off, and it's clear that the best player, the best prospect on that team right now at Oklahoma State is not LeBron Nash, but Marcus Smart, the freshman guard.
Yeah, he looks good. There are two big men that you have very high in your rankings that I need you to sell me on right now. One is Alex Len, and the other one's Isaiah Austin. I know they're projects, but they just seem like really big projects to me.
They are, but they're 7 feet, Zach.
Right.
7 foot sells in the NBA, especially in the NBA draft. If you're going to make a mistake, you make a mistake taking a big guy. And Alex Len is very, very talented. You know, skilled, legitimate 7 feet. At Maryland, sophomore from the Ukraine, who didn't play much. Remember, he was suspended. The NCAA didn't clear him for the first 10 games a year ago.
Yeah.
He put on a bunch of weight in the offseason, and he's got all the tools, but he just doesn't compete all the time. Part of it is Maryland doesn't have a point guard. Part of it is Alex Len just doesn't demand the basketball. But again, in terms of pure talent among the big guys, he's certainly one of the top big guys, especially in the offensive end in the country. He's also a pretty good shot blocker. And then you go Isaiah Austin, freshman, Baylor, long and skilled. He reminds me, and this name probably isn't going to make, you know, too much for you, but a guy named Brad Sellers.
Yeah.
Okay? He was long, and he loved to shoot the three. Austin also a little bit of like B.J. Mullins. You know, B.J. Mullins is three-point shot happy these days. He wasn't like that back in college or high school. But he's got the ability to make them, as does Austin. He's rail thin, Isaiah Austin. He's putting up pretty good numbers, but again, he's kind of fallen in love with that three-point shot. He needs to get tougher, needs to compete, needs to produce a little bit more consistently. But again, they're seven-footers, Len and Austin, and that's why I don't think they get out of the draft lottery.
Yeah, I guess maybe Len not having a point guard on the team, he just had bad timing, because if he had played in the 11 years that it feels like Grievous Vasquez was at Maryland, maybe it would be a different story.
Yeah. No, he would, again. And Vasquez would also, I think, get him to play hard.
Yeah.
Because Vasquez plays with that passion, you know, that intensity, and that's what makes Vasquez so productive.
I know you're going off you've got your scouting methods. When you have, I guess, such a well-talked-about draft class, and then you've got a couple of foreign players, Dario Saric and Rudy Gobert, How do you throw those into your mock drafts? Is it simply what you're hearing? How much do you get to watch of the foreign prospects?
I mean, I'll watch them on Synergy as much as I can. But honestly, if you haven't seen these guys at first, and that's the one thing I've seen with every single American guy.
Yeah.
I've seen them in person at some point. You know, again, it might not be this year, although I've seen almost all of them this year. It might be, you know, a year or two ago. But I've seen all these guys in person. I have not seen the overseas kids in person. So I've got to rely on NBA guys that have seen these guys over and over. I've got to rely on other guys overseas. And that's where you have to, if you haven't seen them in person. Then I'll watch them on tape as much as I can. But listen, I'm far more familiar with all the guys in college, because that's all I do. I run around. I see as many games as I can. I see these kids back from AAU basketball so I can see how they've improved. Or how they haven't improved, how they haven't progressed at all.
You do travel so much. I feel like the next time there's a 24-hour basket or college basketball day, where they're having a game every 2 hours, are you going to make 8 or 9 of those? How many are you going to get to in that day?
They need to do that. I think ESPN needs to consult my schedule.
Yeah,
and maybe, you know, put them in an area where I can make, you know, 4 of them in a day. At least maybe 5. Can I make 5 in a day? Possibly.
If they're staggered correctly, I don't see why not.
Yeah, they'd have to be like all in the Midwest.
Right.
That would be the key. You'd have to almost do them all in the Midwest, because there's enough close to each other, you know, where you could do Indiana, a Louisville, a Kentucky, and then maybe you get like, you know, a couple mid-majors thrown in there in the Midwest.
Before I let you go, I got to keep this Duke-North Carolina rivalry going. I was worried, you know, it might fizzle out without me, so this question is going to ring true. James McAdoo versus Mason Plumlee at the next level. Who is the better pro prospect? Who would you rather have?
You know, I would have told you McAdoo all day long prior to the season, but now I'm going with Mason Plumlee. You know, I worry about McAdoo now because he's caught in between.
Yeah.
He's not a back-to-the-basket guy, and even facing the basket, he's really not able to do that. He's got to be a high-energy guy. He's got to almost be Thomas Robinson.
He's got to be a guy that just you get on the move, right?
Yeah, and just goes and gets it. And he used to be that way. To be honest, in the summer, he played so darn hard. And I did. I thought he had some Thomas Robinson in him. But now, and again, it's hard for him this year because he's the guy and he's probably not ready to be the guy. Mason Plumlee is ready to be the guy. You know, fourth year in college, he's playing so hard. Now, again, does he play a little upright? Does he play a little mechanical? Absolutely. But Mason Plumlee can be, at worst case scenario, a really good rotation big. And maybe at best case scenario, he can be a starting, big man for a team for 10 or 12 years and be just productive. He's never going to be a star, but can he average, 12 or 13 and 7? I think if he's in the right spot, why not?
And that seems to be the theme of the draft is just you're piling up role players that can help you down the road. Jeff Goodman, CBSSports.com. Follow you at GoodmanCBS on Twitter. Thank you so much for joining me.
No, my pleasure. We'll do it again after things mellow out for both of us.
Absolutely.